as you've probably noticed, there's been a panel change. Welcome to the 10:30 docket at the Second Court of Appeals. Your panel for 10:30 is to my right, Justice Bill Meyer.
Good morning.
To my left, Justice Lee Gabriel. I'm Leanne Dofino. And you are our only case on the 10:30 docket that is set for oral submission. So I understand both sides are ready. All right, then if you call the case, we'll get started.
The court will now call No Bloom versus Bloom, Texas County, Indiana. And may it please the court, Mr. Mark Shudd to argue for the appellant, and Ms. Rebecca Bell to argue for the appellant. Okay.
All right, you ready?
Yes. If it pleases the court. Your Honors, I'm Mark Sutter here on behalf of the appellants, Charles, Lindsay, and Judith Noteboom, in this appeal against Farmers Insurance Company. In December of 2005, Lindsay Noteboom was driving an insured automobile when it was struck by an uninsured driver in Ohio. The parties to this case have stipulated that the driver that struck Lindsay was uninsured and was the sole at-fault driver. Noteboom made a general claim under the Farmers Insurance policy that he had both collision and uninsured motorist coverage. A few months later, and this is in the record at page 90, in April of 2006, Farmers sent a letter acknowledging that this would be treated as a UM claim. The letter stated that they had determined the other driver was uninsured, that the uninsured motorist deductible would apply, that they would pay for loss of use, which is only available under uninsured motorist coverage. And the letter also specifically acknowledged that the car might have a residual diminution in value, which they would pay. And they at that time offered $2,700. Noteboom rejected that $2,700 offer and claimed it was worth more like $8,000 or even more. For the next 6 years, Noteboom and Farmers litigated over the issue of the diminution in value amount and Farmers' conduct and bad faith conduct, which is not the subject of this appeal because our bad faith claims were severed into a separate case where they remain pending. Shortly before this case was to go to trial, Farmers agreed to stipulate to the $8,000 in diminution value after the car was repaired. It still was worth $8,000 less than before the repairs, primarily because it was a brand new car. But Farmers now asserted that diminution in value is just not recoverable under the UM policy. That was their position at the trial court. The county court judge agreed, and we appealed. In this de novo review, we say that this court should rule, consistent with well-established law, that diminution in value is recoverable under a UM policy, just as it is recoverable against an insured in a liability case in general, when repairs do not restore the pre-reg value of the vehicle. Both the law of Ohio, which we've cited in our briefing, and Texas law agree on this point. Every case that has ever addressed it has recognized, has held, or stated that that is the rule. The Restatement of Torts states that's the rule. The Texas Department of Insurance Bulletin number 002700 that both parties have provided to this court specifically says that is the case. And I'll just quote from the TDI bulletin, quote, an insurer may be obligated to pay a first-party claimant under the uninsured, underinsured motorist coverage provisions of the policy for any loss of market value of the first-party claimant's automobile, regardless of the completeness of repair. The Texas Supreme Court cited that bulletin in the 2003 case of American Manufacturers Mutual Insurance Company versus Schaefer. That was a case decided actually under the collision coverage, Part D. And the actual holding was, no, you don't get loss of use under collision because there's a specific limiting paragraph which says that, quote, limit of liability, our liability is limited to the lesser of the amount necessary to repair or replace the vehicle. And the courts have construed that to say the lesser of repair, so if you repair it, that's all, under Part D, collision coverage. But the court specifically pointed out in Schaefer that that is a loss which would be covered under the insuring provision of a policy, if not for that specific exclusionary language, words of limitation, under Part D. Again, restatement of torts, Section 928, specifically states that damages to a chattel includes the reasonable cost to repair, quote, with due allowance for any difference between the original value and the value after repairs. Texas and Ohio cases both rely on that. In Texas, the pattern jury charge 18.4, which both parties have attached and submitted to this court, specifically states, if the repairs do not completely restore the former value of the property, the plaintiff may also recover the difference in value before the occurrence and after the repairs. And we've cited four or five other cases involving chattels, one involving a car, one involving a jet plane, several involving houses, that all apply the general rule in Texas that if your repairs don't restore the value of the property, part of your damages are the diminution in value. Farmers has essentially, they still argue against it in their briefing, but they sort of seem to concede that point. And they now are taking the position that since Farmers went ahead and repaired plaintiff's car, that somehow means that plaintiff must have elected to only recover under collision and not the UM policy. There's no evidence in the record, either here or before the trial court, of any election that plaintiffs made to do that. In fact, the only evidence, again, it's at page 90 of the record, is the letter which specifically proves the opposite, that the parties agreed that this was a UM claim back in 2006, and that the only dispute is the amount of diminution in value and whether it's recoverable now. Moreover, the Texas law that was in effect at the time, and I believe it's to the same effect today, but it was Insurance Code 5.061, paragraph 4, paragraph B, specifically says that the insured has the right to choose and that the insured, I'll read it, it says, if the insured has collision coverage and uninsured or underinsured property damage liability coverage, the insured may recover under the policy coverage chosen by the insured. Goes on to say, and this is important, in the event neither coverage is sufficient alone to cover all damage resulting from a single occurrence, the insured may recover under both coverages. Now, even if we had, Noteboom had somehow elected to have the car repaired under collision, we all agree diminution in value is not covered under the collision policy. The collision policy is not sufficient to cover all damages. Noteboom paid for UM coverage, and under the statute, Noteboom would be able to file a claim for diminution in value under the UM policy. And that's also not only what the law said at the time, it's specifically what the contract says. The contract says that the insured gets to choose which coverage to apply. And again, there is just no, there's no evidence that Noteboom ever chose to go under the collision and forego making a UM claim.
Where in the policy does it say that the policyholder gets to elect?
Your Honor,
I found it in a provision that said other insurance.
Your Honor, it's at the record at page 72. I'll quote it for you. It says, this is actually under the Part C uninsured motorist section of the policy. It's just before Part D kicks in. And it says, if there is other applicable, I'll go to paragraph B, for any property damage to which the coverage for damages to your auto, and that's Part D, coverage for damage to your auto, if for any property damage which Part D of this policy or similar coverage from another policy and this coverage, Part C, both apply, you may choose the coverage from which damages will be paid.
So that's the provision under other insurance, and you're saying
yes,
that applies to Part D as well as other insurance?
Yes, Your Honor, because it specifically says for any property damage which the, and then it capitalizes the words, coverage for damage to your auto of this policy. Then in parentheses it says, or other insurance, similar. And Your Honor, it also goes on in the next sentence after what I read to say, you may recover under both coverages, but only if, number one, neither one by itself is sufficient to cover the loss. Just what the statute says, just what the statute requires. And in this case, Although there wasn't an election, if there had been, collision couldn't have covered the diminution in value loss because that's limited under the collision contract. So, you know, they come back with the final argument and said, well, you know, under UM policy, we, an insurance company, don't really have to pay that under Brainard and these other holdings until you get a court judgment establishing that this was caused by an uninsured driver, damages caused by an uninsured driver. You have to get a judgment before they have to pay under UM policy now. That may be the law, but that doesn't mean they can't voluntarily go ahead and do it like they do every day and like they did and specifically acknowledged in their letter in this case that they were going to treat it as a UM policy. In fact, it's a pretty good idea. As we pointed out in the brief, if they'd have waited until we actually sued the uninsured driver and got a judgment saying it was the uninsured driver's fault before they repaired this vehicle, they would be responsible for $25 a day in loss of use damages. Farmers don't want to pay $25 a day for 3 or 4 years in loss of use damages. I submit that is why they went ahead and fixed this car, not because they thought plaintiff had made an election, which plaintiff clearly did not make. So in short, Your Honors, the residual post-repair diminution value is a recoverable element of damages. It's Texas or Ohio law, whichever applies. It's therefore recoverable under the UM policy. The Texas statute requires that UM coverage must, quote, provide for payment to the insured of all sums which he shall be legally entitled to recover as damages from owners or operators of uninsured vehicles. And that's exactly what the policy says. We will pay damage which a covered person is legally entitled to recover from the owner or operator of an uninsured vehicle. The parties previously agreed in this case, as shown by the record, that this is a UM claim. They've stipulated in this court as to all prerequisites for UM coverage, namely the fault of an uninsured driver causing the damages. And yet they want to come in and say, well, we have to go get a judgment and that in a third court before they, well, I don't even understand the argument. They say that that's not right because they fixed the car. And car repair of the car is covered under both Part C and Part D. What they did is what I think insurance companies typically do. They fixed the car immediately, and then as soon as they found out it was an uninsured driver, they sent the letter and refunded the difference in the deductible and treated it as a UM claim. The parties have stipulated that $8,000 is the amount of the residual diminution in value, so there's no question about that. They've stipulated that the other driver was at fault. They've stipulated we had uninsured motorist coverage. So this court should reverse the trial court and should render judgment that the $8,000 is recoverable under the policy. And I'll answer any questions, but that's pretty much my argument.
Any questions? Okay, thank you, Mark. Becca?
May it please the court. Your Honors, my name is Rebecca Bell, and I represent Farmers Insurance in this appeal. I think it's important that we take a step back a little bit from the ultimate conclusions that the parties seek and look at the progression of what Farmers considers to be an election and process. And in backing up and looking at even the stipulated facts and the pleadings, which is the context in which those stipulated facts occurred, a lot of reference was made in the briefing and then again before the court today about a letter that was presented during settlement negotiations prior to suit being filed that the Noteboom family now asks this court to make as binding judicial admissions in the later litigation. It brings us back to the standard of review, which is where it should have started. This court isn't to test, I agree, the legal or factual sufficiency of the evidence, but it still must try to determine whether there is any legal theory upon which the trial court judgment can be affirmed under these types of stipulated facts and pleadings. It's not as simplistic as Farmers admitted that they owe diminution in value, or that Farmers admitted they owe loss of use. None of that occurred during the context of this lawsuit. And if this court narrows itself to the court's record and the stipulations and the standard of review that extends from those stipulations, the question is there any legal theory upon which the trial court judgment can stand? And the answer to that is yes. It could either be under the election of the policy provisions. It can either be under an election of remedies based upon tort law, which was pointed out by the appellant today in terms of the two different pattern jury charges. Or it could be simply upon, under this specific scenario, under a very narrowly tailored judgment. There is no reason for this court to announce general principles regarding diminution in value as if it could ever be recovered. In this case, the judgment, which is found on page 91.
Did you just say diminution in value can never be recovered?
No, Your Honor. I said that this, it certainly can be recovered in certain circumstances. What I'm saying is this court doesn't have to make a determination that it's never recoverable in order to affirm the judgment below. That broad sweeping of a holding isn't necessary in order to affirm the trial court judgment. Because the trial court judgment spoke specifically to this Acura that was at issue in this case under the acts of these parties. And the reason that specificity is important is because the Supreme Court of Texas noted in the Macias case that a party's actions can demonstrate election, that it's not necessary to have a written election to say which way you're going to make those decisions between coverage C, which is the uninsured motorist claim, and coverage D, which is the collision claim. Based upon the briefing, it appears that there is no dispute that if an election was made under the terms of the policy for collision coverage, that the only thing that is owed is the cost of repair for like kind and quality. That's the TDI bulletins that were cited. That's the case law that's interpreted it since then. That's even found in the briefing of both parties. Because Schaefer, the case that is relied upon by the appellant, says there is no requirement.
I think everybody agrees to that. Get to, if you would, get to the point of how they elected to proceed under Part D.
Yes, Your Honor. I think the fact that when the initial submission came through, it's also undisputed that the initial election was certainly under the collision policy. The reason we know that is because that was the amount of the deductible that was applied. There are immediate benefits to seeking coverage D, collision policy, because you can immediately act without the need to find either liability to determine insurance or to determine the scope of your damages. If you immediately seek coverage under collision D, you get the benefits at a higher deductible.
But it's not uncommon to seek your claim or to originally file your claim under Part D and then later when you find out that the other driver was uninsured to then go to Part C. And that's why you returned his deductible, is it not?
That's correct, Your Honor, but that also then shifts to a different burden that has to be carried. The Noteboom family wants the benefit of proving nothing and having a wide scope of recoverable damages.
Why do they have to prove anything? If you've stipulated this is an uninsured claim, there's $8,000 in diminution of value damages, what is it you want them to prove?
Your Honor, I think it goes back to the difference between recovery of damages under Part C and damages to be sought. It's the whole point of the second part of the briefing that's raised by Farmers. That because you cannot recover in Texas for repair costs, which was recovered, plus loss of market value, which is what's being sought, an election has to occur.
Do you concede you can recover both of those under Part C?
No, Your Honor.
You do not concede that, because it sounds like in your brief you do concede that.
No, Your Honor. In fact, under Part C, the best that they could do would be to establish what damages they would be legally entitled to. In fact, the language of the Schaefer case says legally recoverable. Not that I can ask for it. In fact, the cases that are cited by the appellant all outline situations where perhaps multiple theories were submitted, But then they had to elect the kind of damage that they wanted to recover at the end. Despite what was just represented, which was that there every case that has ever discussed it has determined that loss of market value after repair is recoverable, is absolutely incorrect. In fact, there's no case that says that, and there's two cases that are cited by the appellee, the Jones versus Waterford case, and then I believe it's discussed in the Hartford case. In both of those situations, the court said, you have to choose. You may request it. You may say, I want repairs, and I want loss of use, and I want market value. But when the time comes to enter judgment, you have to choose. The cases that are also cited in the comment of the pattern jury charge 18.4 all either involve DTPA claims, because again, remember, 18.4 is not specific to an uninsured motorist context. It's purely whether the damage could be repairable or whether it's a total loss. And as an alternative to a market value determination, the pattern jury charge 18.4 says you can ask for repairs and loss of use. The problem is that Mr. Noteboom and his family want repairs plus loss of use plus diminished value. And that isn't anything that they would be legally entitled to. And here's another element that the trial court was...
Ma'am, you're using the term election. And you used that in your brief, and you've used it in your oral argument a number of times. The language that's in the policy doesn't talk about an election, does it? Doesn't say the word election. Isn't that right?
Your Honor, I don't think that term is used, correct.
And now we're talking about elections in terms of a jury trial, in terms of an election of the measure of damage for recovery in a case that would be a case against the uninsured motorist if they had insurance. And so what I'm concerned about is that you've stipulated that it's $8,000 here. We use the term diminution in value, but really we're talking about the difference in the market value. I mean, isn't the term diminution in value is just nothing but it's encompassed within what we're talking about in a selection of a measure of damages that you've got to make an election to at the time after you've even had a jury trial and answers to the questions that the jury has submitted.
And Your Honor, I agree with you, and I think that therein lies the problem, because if, let's take it out of the context of the insurance policy for a moment, since the way that it's being pursued is if they would be able to recover all of these damages in a trial against the tortfeasor. And in a trial against the tortfeasor, the tortfeasor, based upon the facts in this case, would have been presented with evidence of the cost of repair, which would have been repaid and offset to any final judgment. They would have been presented with the $1,850 of stipulated loss use. They would have been presented with the fact that Mr. Noteboom traded in and sold the vehicle after receiving all these benefits and retained the value, which would automatically cut against the market value. So the mere fact that I stipulate that something is worth $8,000 doesn't mean that I owe $8,000.
When you stipulate to it in a set of facts that you've stipulated to in a limited matter like this case was tried, and then you come in here and say we've stipulated that $8,000 is essentially what it takes to make up the difference in the market value of the car before and after. And then you come in and say, but you can't do that in this case because you've already filed a claim under your collision part of your policy. And we're holding you to the fact that you can't do a further choice of market value analysis.
Your Honor, with all due respect, those are two separate election arguments that we're making.
I understand that, and I'm understanding that. I'm trying to be careful that you're focused on the fact that the election under the law in terms of the measure of damages and in terms of the recovery after a jury trial or after a trial is different than what you have in your policy where it says here are paths you can go down in working with your adjuster at the insurance company on the standard automobile policy issued by the Texas proclamations of the insurance department. And then once you make those choices, if you still have a lawsuit out on the end of this, then what actually happened in terms of money exchange is to be a part of the evidence, but it is not something that is determinative of the contractual arrangements between the insurance company and the insured.
And, Your Honor, in the based upon coverage C, if we let's assume that there was no election made under the collision. Let's pretend none of that ever happened. If we're solely looking at collision, uninsured motorist coverage, under Part C, the burden would be on the appellant to establish the damages that they were legally entitled to recover. That's not a burden that was carried by Farmers. That's a burden that's carried by the Noteboom family in order to recover under the policy.
But that's a burden they don't have to meet in this case because you stipulated to the damages.
Your Honor, we stipulated to what the damages would be if they were sought, not that they were legally entitled to recover them.
Just did. You stipulated to what they would have been entitled to recover from the tortfeasor, an amount. If they were entitled to recover, here's the amount. We agree. Here's the amount.
That's correct, Your Honor. If they are entitled to recover repair costs plus loss of use plus diminution in value, here's what the amount would be.
So if the policy requires that you pay that, if this court were to find that the policy requires that you pay that, they don't have any burden because it's the policy's requirement. How do you get around the portion of the TDI bulletin that Mr. Sutterth read earlier?
Your Honor, the TDI bulletin spoke specifically to Part D. Now we're going back.
The second bulletin speaks specifically to Part C, does it not?
You're correct. And when it said the phrase that it may require, may, not always, not demands, not an edict issued out. It said that it may require. And I agree, it goes back to the question that Justice Stefano asked. There are times when under a first party claim, that diminished value may be owed. None of this is contrary.
Okay, well, if this isn't the time where that happens, give me a hypothetical when you say it does.
When it's elected, when under 18.4, instead of pursuing market value, under 18.3, when they seek market value instead of repair costs and loss of use, they have a choice. The pattern jury charge says it's an alternative. You can choose loss of market value, diminution in value, or you can choose repair costs and loss of use. That's all that we're asserting. And if the trial court relied upon those alternative choices, saying, you can either pursue market value valuation of damages for chattel, or you can choose, if you were the plaintiff against the tortfeasor, you could choose loss of use and repair. Because the repair costs had already been paid and accepted, the trial court could have reasonably determined that the plaintiff would have sought against the tortfeasor under 18.4. And again, that's our... the entire approach is that the stipulation of what the damage amount doesn't make it legally entitled to.
Ms. Bell, if your position were to be adopted by the court, why in the world would any consumer ever buy both these coverages? Because if your position is accepted by the court, then what you're doing when you buy first-party coverage under collision and you accept the benefits of that first-party coverage, then you're going to be precluded from recovering under your uninsured motorist and underinsured motorist provision.
Your Honor, not if the opinion written by this court says that the election isn't an election between C and D, but instead an election between the amount of damages that would be recoverable in the tortfeasor action. I'm sorry, I see that.
It's okay. Please finish.
If the opinion is phrased that the election is the type of damage to be recovered, which it would be conceding that they only wanted coverage C.
I'd be very surprised if there was any consumers in the state who thought that's what they were buying when they paid for their insurance policy.
I'll refrain on whether even our consumers completely understand the contract, but that's why it's voluntary. Under the new statutes, why it's a voluntary selection.
Thank you for answering my question, ma'am.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Do you have any other questions? Thank you. Mark.
If it pleases the court, Your Honors, just a few loose ends I wanted to touch on that she mentioned. She said that the letter was not, she said it was part of settlement discussions, although she said it was written before there was even a lawsuit filed. It was not part of settlement discussions. It was an agreement the parties made in submitting a claim under the policy. Furthermore, it was not objected to in the trial court on any basis and is part of the record. She keeps saying there's an election, and as I think your honors have focused in on, there is no evidence of any election. She said a party's actions can demonstrate an election, and the correct question was, what actions did we do that demonstrated an election? There aren't any. She said that there's no dispute that if an election was made, then we would not, that if we had elected collision coverage, then we would not be entitled to diminution in value. No, there is a dispute on that, because if we had, in fact, somehow elected collision coverage, we could still cover uninsured motorist diminution value under UM, because it's not covered under collision, and because the statute and the policy both say you get all your damages, even if you have to resort to both coverages. They said because the amount of the deductible that was applied, that proved that because Farmers initially applied a higher deductible when they repaired it, proves that we elected collision. No, Farmers made the decision on which deductible to apply. And furthermore, if the amount of deductible proves what happened, then we win because the evidence shows they refunded that and the deductible they actually wound up charging was the UM deductible. And then finally they said that she said that we traded in or sold the motor vehicle and realized the value of the vehicle in the sale. There is absolutely nothing in the record or in the stipulations about whether or not this vehicle was sold. If it was sold, there's certainly no evidence on whether Note Booms lost even more money than the $8,000 stipulated diminution in value. The stipulation just does away with having to look into that issue. And finally, she said that the insurance bulletin isn't mandatory because it says it may be payable, and it doesn't use any words like require. It actually says an insurer may be obligated to pay a third-party claimant. And she said, well, that means whenever there's an election made, and it only applies if the claimant elects diminution in value instead of repair cost. And it absolutely does not say that. It says, regardless of the completeness of repair, an insurer may be obligated to pay a first-party claimant under the UMUIM motorist provisions of the policy for any loss of market value of the first-party claimant's automobile, regardless of the completeness of repair. That, again, was quoted approvingly and explained by the Texas Supreme Court in the diminished value case, the Part D case that the defendant cited. You have no more questions. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate your coming to argue today. Your case is submitted. I understand we're going to get some bad weather later, so... This court will be adjourned, and you're free to go about your business and to avoid the weather.